Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in, since they going back to showing action tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the anime action fan sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I'm, of course, your Prom Tom host, Thomas Lee. From Tom S, and this is episode 42. And finally, after a long hiatus, as you all know, and everything, we're gonna finish Disney Month, because even though it's not February anymore, by God, we're gonna finish Disney Month. And on this episode, and for the final review of Disney Month, we're going to review a new movie that came out last winter. Just came out on DVD, in fact, which is part of the reason why I'm reviewing it. That is, of course, Wreck-It Ralph. The much-beloved movie that came out last winter. That story centers around video games and lots of other fan-beloved items, as we'll get to. There was a lot of big fanfare into the lead-up of this movie. I know I started getting very... I was interested in before in the first trailers, but when you started to learn they were actually bringing voice actors that you knew and loved, like, oh, I don't know, Kyle Abear, to do cameos and stuff, got very, very excited for this movie. I know I got very excited. A lot of fans were getting very excited. And I think that's what is one of the most interesting things about this movie. There's a very interesting aspect of this movie that I like this movie, and yet I'm mixed on it. I like this movie, yet I'm really mixed on it. Let me repeat that. I like this movie, but I'm really, really mixed about it. We'll get to it, so because I kind of have some problems with the story and stuff like that, but we'll get into it with the story. It's just, in trying to think of what my thoughts are for this movie, I just found myself a lot of them being very, very confused, as opposed to the normal times I feel absolutely confused during the day, which is a completely different story. And just a word to you guys, I apologize if there's any background noise in this episode, like, oh, I don't know, a washing machine going off or people talking in the background, people in the house. Because, I don't live by myself, but I have family over, because, well, for those who haven't figured it out yet, or don't know, I'm Jewish. Maybe you could have told that by the Tom's Eight Crazy Nights Hanukkah-themed holiday specials I did, but that's a whole different story. But, it's Passover, which means it's hell on earth for me and families spending the week. So, just as much as you're weirded out, I'm sure they're now getting weirded out by me, but that's a whole different story. And before we get into the review proper of Wreck-It Ralph. There is something that was there with Wreck-It Ralph in the theater when it was released, and it is on DVD that I want to talk about. And that is, there's an animated short that accompanied the film called Paper Man. Now, it could be CG, but at least to my eye, it looks like it really is a, you know, just computer hand-drawn animated short. It's in black and white. Sort of the theme, and I guess the time, it seems like it's like the 1950s, maybe 1960s, though maybe more 1950s in the time. And the story basically follows these two people who just happen to meet while waiting for a train. A guy who works like as an office, in an office, you know, insurance office or something, and this beautiful young girl who, or it's just a young woman, who's played by Kari Hargan, aka Sakura from Naruto. Again, we have more anime references and video or voice actors that we know we love in a Disney movie. This is awesome, but that's besides the point. Or at least that she wasn't credited. Anyways, there is actually no word spoken, which is the except for giggles and things like that, but basically it's a story they meet, and he wants to ask her, but he never does, and so he's in his office, and all of a sudden he sees her across at the office on the other side of the street. So he's trying to get her attention to wave hi, to get her attention, so the way he tries to do it is he continuously takes papers that he's supposed to be filling insurance claims on, I guess, or something like that, making them into paper airplanes, and throwing them across, and he just fails every time. Of course, the last one he throws is this paper airplane that, you know, she flew into her face when they were waiting for a train, and her lip marks were on. And now, this doesn't sound like a particularly interesting story, mind you, at this point, until what happens next, which is all the paper airplanes just happened to gather, and there's one place in this alley, and this is where Disney magic starts to show up. And the paper airplanes start moving on their own, and they kind of split up, and they, you know, he's like despondent, like left the office, depressed, and the paper airplanes like just engulf him and start moving him in a certain direction. The paper airplane with the kiss mark finds the young girl, or says a young woman. This I keep calling her girl. She's not a girl. She's a woman. And is moving her in a certain place. And finally it helps them meet back at the train station where they first met. And it's just this great happy ending. And after credits roll, they show them like having lunch. There's no, like, they live happily ever after. I think just they have lunch. And then you're left to your own conclusion of what happens afterwards. This is animation at perfection, which is why this is worth talking about. This is literally, I cry at the end of this animated short. It is a beautiful, gorgeous short. The music is wonderful, and it's very subtle at the beginning, but then when the magic starts happening, there's this wonderful, and this is where I start to cry about it, because the music is just gorgeous. It is, oh my god, it's, you feel the magic just from the music and what's happening on screen. The animation is wonderful, and you know, and it was Glenn Keane, Mark Henn was a part of this, I think Andreas Deja was a part of this, along with some, I guess, newcomers. Just absolutely incredible. And again, hand-drawn animation is like, honestly, if I really rated them back, I would rate the animated short was better than the actual movie Wreck-It Ralph. Which, again, later you'll hear my viewing. And again, I'm not saying that Wreck-It Ralph by any means is a horrible movie, but this was perfection. And just the portrayal of these characters and with no words. And that's the great thing. Yeah, they were voice actors, but they were like, it was like giggles and you know, stuff like that. There really were no words spoken. It was just music and animation and telling this story in black and white of a guy who meets a girl and magic happens. It is gorgeous. It is wonderful. It's one of the best things to come out of Disney in years. With the probably one exception being The Princess and the Frog in my mind. And again, I'm saying the best thing to come out in years in the sense of they are great stuff to have come out, but they're not better than this. And that's how great this animated short is. It's just absolutely incredible. It was worth spending 5 minutes to talk to you about before I get into the review of Wreck-It Ralph, because it was just that incredible. But yeah, let's get right into it with, of course, our synopsis of Wreck-It Ralph. Wreck-It Ralph follows, gee, what a shock, Wreck-It Ralph, a bad guy in a video game called Fix-It Felix Jr. Just a takeoff sort of Donkey Kong type of classic games, and it's his 30th anniversary in the arcade. And at the time, Wreck-It Ralph is having issues with spending 30 years as a bad guy who gets thrown into the mud. And when he doesn't get invited to the parley for Fix-It Felix Jr. to celebrate the game's 30th anniversary by the Nicelanders, he sets out to get himself a medal to impress the Nicelanders that he too can be good. Of course, this leads him to going to one of the newest games in the arcade, Heroes Duty, which is a play of many first-person shooters, including Halo, because it's kind of obvious. Anyways, he finds out just how real video games have gotten, but you know, after the arcade closes, climbs the tower and gets himself a medal. But unfortunately, he also causes a mutant bug to hatch and latch onto his face. Very much like Aliens. Yeah, it was very much like Aliens. I felt very uncomfortable during that scene. But he stumbles into an escape pod and launches out of the game Hero Duty and into a game called Sugar Rush, where he runs into a young girl named Vanellope Von Sweets, who tricks him and takes his medal to enter a race. From there on, Ralph and Sweets must work together to form a new race car and win the race to try to get his medal back. But meanwhile, the evil King Candy, who, as it gets turned out by a twist later, is really a old video game character named Turbo Terrific from a game called Turbo Terrific, who has taken over the world, trying to stop Vanellope on Sweets because she's a glitch, telling Ralph that if she wins the race, she'll glitch in the game, the players won't want to play the game anymore, and the game will be unplugged. And while everybody else would be able to get out of the game, Vanellope will not, because she's a glitch, and glitches cannot leave the game. But of course, as aforementioned said before, King Candy's ruse gets revealed. Of course, the bug that it latched onto Ralph had multiplied and starts ravishing Sugar Rush, including King Candy, turning him into the ultimate virus. But by knocking tons of menthols into a Diet Cola Springs, yes, I said that right, Ralph is able to create a beam that attracts all the bugs, including King Candy, into a spouting volcano, killing them.
He died? And this is supposed to be a kid's movie!
Yes, somebody died in a Disney movie. Thank you, Rizzo. Yep, that's right. Somebody died in a Disney movie. That we kind of saw explode. It's actually kind of very cool, but that's the point. Finally, they, with the help of Felix and Sergeant Tamarian Jean Calhoun, whole different story. Her and Felix were trying to find Ralph in Sugarland. Didn't care. That's besides the point. But finally, they push Vanellope Von Sweets across the finish line, reveal that she's really the real princess in charge. But of course, she's decided, I'm going to turn this into democracy. Everybody gets home just in time for the arcade to open, no game is lost, and Ralph realizes that, just because he's a bad guy doesn't mean he's a bad guy. So with that, let's get into our review of Wreck-It Ralph.
Hey, you moved my stuff! I'm gonna wreck it! I can fix it.
Welcome back, and let's get right into it. Of course, we start with music. And usually I do, especially with Disney, I do songs first and then the overall music. I think I'm going to kind of do it in reverse this week. Because again, there's no sort of song typical of a Disney musical, because this isn't a musical. There's sort of the music that's sort of in the background. And then there's individual songs here and there, of course, in the credits that there's to talk about. But let's start with the overall music. Overall, I really, really enjoyed the overall music. It was because one of the unique things in watching sort of the very few special features, which I'll talk about that towards the end of the review, because I'm very disappointed by the special features on the DVD. To an extent, but they created three different worlds to an extent, four if you sort of include Game Central, and just sort of the music that had to be unique to each world. For instance, the music in Heroes Duty, had to sort of capture that sort of first-person shooter aspect of the world, and it was this sort of sort of not rock, mind you, but sort of rave type of music that I found very, very interesting. It's one aspect you're going to hear me talk about with this review is the whole aspect of, wow, they put this in a Disney movie. Because, really, that's a lot of it. Again, we're going to be talking about, I have that as a topic, we're going to talk about it all there. But again, just this music that you wouldn't expect to hear in a Disney movie, but would expect to hear in a first-person shooter. And it creates this upbeat tempo for a particular scene that makes it very, very well. And it's sort of the softer version of that when Ralph is in the world after the arcade is open. It's really well done. The music for Sugar Rush, very upbeat, up-tempo. I don't want to say girly, but again, it's sort of it's a Candyland sort of cart game, is what Sugar Rush is. If you haven't figured it out yet, or for those who haven't seen the movie. So sort of those upbeat tempos and everything, very pop-eccentric, which includes sort of the main theme song, which is a song, which I'll get to in songs in just a moment. But I think my favorite piece of sort of background music is sort of the 8-bit sort of song, not song, but music that's really the main background type of theme for Fix It, Feel It Jr. and That Land and everything. It's also played in sort of the game, it's at the beginning of the movie where Ralph is coming from the Badman meeting. That music sort of here in sort of Game Central, and you sort of hear it in Wreck-It Ralph, and it has that 8-bit feel. I really, really enjoy it, because it really does take me back to sort of the 8-bit games and that stuff. And for that matter, I really enjoyed it on that level. And then, of course, like you said, you have the songs, and they're few and far between. There's one of the credits, Again, they're not songs like, oh, hey, here's this musical number to advance the story like we see in a lot of Disney movies. It's much more sort of that Pixar thing to where, oh, here's this song for this unique moment to sort of kind of tell a story. Really only used kind of in three places. Is there really songs? I guess technically the first one that would come up, and it's really new to me, is again the Sugarland, or Sugar Rush, I should say, song, you know, which is by AB48. It's like AK or something like that. They're a Japanese pop idol group, which really amazes me. Again, they put this in a Disney movie. Because I do believe this is the first time sort of a Japanese pop idol group has been on a Disney soundtrack. And it's, to me, it's just amazing. You know, for those who don't know about Japanese pop idol groups, you know, AB48, along with the, you know, other groups like Mori Matsumi, they're groups who, you know, they have an age limit, actually. You know, they come in at a certain age, and once they get a certain age, they have to leave the group. But there are these groups of girls, you know, they're pop idols, and they sing songs. And so to see one, again, in a Disney movie, really amazing to me. And I didn't even realize I didn't watch a movie that was a Japanese pop, because they only do that first sort of verse, and you go, S-U-G-E-R, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, Sugar Rush, Sugar Rush. So, if anything, I would have guessed it'd be Puffy Yami Yumi Yumi. Well known for their Teen Titan theme song. It did for the Teen Titans animated series on Cartoon Network. But, you know, it wasn't until I watched the credits and saw AB48. I'm like, AB48? They have a Japanese pop idol group in this? Awesome! It really was very interesting to see that. And again, and that song really does capture, I think, the essence of what they were trying to capture with the Sugar Rush video game setting there. The next song would be, I don't want to call it a reprieve, but it's sort of a use of the song Shut Up and Drive by Rihanna. That's used when Ralph is helping Vanellope learn how to drive. I don't know why, I just like that song, and it just, I think it worked really, really well in that scene. And I guess really the only other song to really mention, and there are some others, but I guess that are like inspired or something like that, but they're really mostly background music. The really only other song is sort of the ending credit song, and by Owl City is, I believe, the name of the group, and it's When Will I See You Again. And for some reason I really enjoy that song. And I think the aspect of it is, you know, there's that sort of middle reprieve right before, the, you know, sort of the final verse and that. I don't know why I get sort of teary-eyed when I hear it. And in this case, when they're showing it in the movie or during the credits, it's when, you know, all four of the main characters are on the dance floor and they're sort of dancing. It's this aspect of friendship I sort of, at least I take from the song in that aspect of the song. I don't know why, that sort of makes me teary-eyed, and I really do love that aspect of the song. So overall, with the music as a whole, I think they did a really good job capturing sort of the essence of video games and the different video games they had to go into. I don't know if it would be a must-buy type of soundtrack. I don't know if it's the most memorable by any means, but it's a very good soundtrack. It's worth listening to. I didn't go into this expecting to have an awesome soundtrack, but for what I got, it did exceed my expectations of what I thought the movie would have. Like I said, a lot of surprises with AB48. So that's kind of like heavy rave type of music in Heroes Duty. This really surprised me. Like I said, it's good. It's not that I'm surprised that it's bad. I'm surprised, but it is good music. It's just I'm surprised, like I said, this isn't a Disney movie. Again, like I said, you'll be hearing me say that a lot. With that, let's move on to animation. And again, this is a sort of CG style animated movie done by Walt Disney Studios. It's sort of, I would sort of compare it to sort of the same thing they did with Bolt and sort of what Walt Disney Animated Studios does. It's not Pixar, but it's Walt Disney Animated Studios. And I think people need to understand there is two different studios that do that. Where Walt Disney Animated Studios will do both sort of CG and traditional animation, though on computers, you know, Pixar is primarily CG. But this is a CG movie, like I said, by Walt Disney Animated Studios. And it did feature a lot of newer talent, you know, sort of the talent that worked on Bolt, and I would think movies like that. Though it is interesting to note, looking at the credits, you know, people like Glenn Keane, Mark Henn, you know, helped with a lot of supervision and that stuff. I didn't see Andreas Deja there, but I wouldn't be surprised if he also helped out, too. The overall, I think it captured what it was trying to capture as far as being into a video game. Again, that whole aspect of three different worlds. You know, sort of that 8-bit feel to Wreck-It Ralph's world. If you actually look, everything's squares. I think one of the more unique things to see about this is, you know, when, you know, early in the film when Ralph is, like, creating his bed in a dump out of the bricks and he's punching them, if you look at the smoke, they're all squares. It's just this very unique of everything is sort of square-shaped and every sort of that 8-bit feel to it. I very much enjoyed that aspect of the animation, just the sort of, it's a unique attention to detail without being detailed. You know, it's that, it's showing how to be detailed yet be simplified, which I really enjoyed. And then sort of the hard edges and really that sort of modern first-person shooter game feel of Hero's Duty that I thought was really unique. And then, of course, Sugar Rush. You had that whole aspect of everything's made out of candy and seeing what certain candies, and they really went to great detail with the animation style to really make that feel. You know, you had these three different feels to it. You know, there's at least within the character designs, there's a sort of similarity between all three, but there's a difference between all three that's really, really immediate and obvious to see. And I really enjoyed that aspect, that there was these sort of different animation styles that were working all together and yet were in fact still different. I thought in that sense they really accomplished, I think, from an animation aspect, what they were trying to do with Wreck-It Ralph. With the character designs, again, like I said, I like Wreck-It Ralph's. I love the color scheme. I think it really works, helping to understand him as a neutral character. Because he is this, he plays, you know, it's aspect, I play a bad guy on TV, but I'm not really a bad guy in real life. And so I think the color scheme really helped towards that neutrality, you know, sort of the blue and the red. I like that he was this big sort of character. And then you had Felix's design where he was a sort of small character. Again, that whole Mario, Donkey Kong, Mario, Bowser type of feel to it. Again, sort of a reference in itself to video games within the character designs. So for that aspect of their character designs, I very much liked it. You know, Vanellope von Sweets, and of course King Candy, and all the characters from Sugar Rush, again, this very super deformed, again, it's this aspect of, like, it is this sort of same style, but it's different in aspects. Again, those square type of feel and simplicity to Fix-It Felix Jr. and to Wreck-It Ralph. Well, and then on Sugar Rush, that very super deformed, very cutesy look to King Candy / Turbo Terrific. You know, the very Vanellope von Sweets, a very aspect, you know, the aspect of candy within them, I thought was very interesting to look at. Then, of course, you have Sergeant Tamaron, Gene Calhoun, of course, the other soldiers from Hero's Duty. it just seemed like, compared to the other main character, she was always a little bit more detailed. And again, like I said, the ability to do that, yet still keep sort of an overall sort of similarity in the style, I thought was very, very unique and very well done. And it just, again, she really seemed like she was like a Samus or another strong sort of independent female character stepped out of a first-person shooter. And I really liked that aspect of it. The action sequences, which were, there were many of, there was, of course, that main action sequence in Hero's Duty. Just the chaos. It really captured the chaos that some of these first-person shooter gamers are really doing these days. And I really loved that aspect of it. And then, of course, you had the different action sequences. You know, in Sugarland, I love sort of the racing sequences. And again, they really capture that feel of being in a, you know, sort of the classic sort of arcade kart game. You know, where you're behind the wheel and everything. Almost a Mario Kart type of feel, which I'm sure they had. I'm sure there were many hours spent researching with Mario Kart and the firing of red shells. Because there's that scene where King Candy says, you know, have some candy, and he fires the heat seekers, and I'm like, he got a red shell. It all goes back to Mario Kart. But, very, sort of, very entertaining with the action sequences in this movie, from the kart racing, sort of the chase from the factory and everything, again, the Hero's Duty aspect of it. For that aspect, I found it very, very entertaining. And then you have the background and special effects. And again, you know, like I said, similar somewhat in style overall for the movie. But again, in the details, they're made unique because you have these three different worlds. And again, like I said, the special effects, you know, the being 8-bit feel to it in sort of the Nicelander, Fix-It Felix Jr. Try saying that 5 times fast. Fix-It Felix Jr. I can't do it. But again, sort of that square feel to the world. Again, the sort of the dark and the atmosphere that they really captured, and both in the background and special effects for Hero's Duty, was absolutely incredible. It was straight out of a first-person shooter game. And then, of course, with Sugarland, just the, like I said, and the attention to detail, and looking at the really short special feature about the behind the making of this movie, because, hey, we're targeting kids. It's not like adults buy this movie and want a whole hour and a half into the behind the making of this film like you did with Aladdin and Beauty and the Beast and all that stuff. You know, though, people don't want that. That's besides the point. I'm getting to something I'll get into later. But, yeah, with, you know, the backgrounds. Candyland, again, the focus on, you know, how can we use, what candy would work here? You know, again, the volcano being sort of a Coke, Diet Coke volcano. You know, the roof is lined with menthols, which I thought was interesting. And just the different use of candy, I thought was really well done. Again, the special effects were really well done. It's very popsy, sort of pop art feel to the special effects in Sugar Rush that I thought was really, really well done. Mind you, something we haven't really talked about in here is sort of Game Central, which is sort of the fourth world. It's the world where, you know, it's basically a big indie, because they do show the arcade here, because there are times where they go out in the arcade and there's the arcade owner and the gamers themselves, and basically it's this giant power strip is what I was trying to think of. It's a big power strip that arcades would have where tons of games are plugged into one, and basically that's how they move from game to game, is, you know, they travel like a train through the wires to the power strip, which is Game Central, and you can actually move to different games from there. it's interesting to see, you know, there are times where they'll flip to, you know, to the outside. And so, like, there's a scene where they're at Tapper, which is an old game you kids won't understand. And, you know, you actually see Ralph in there and Ryu and Ken and some other video game characters who really shouldn't be in there. Another aspect is, you know, when you leave the Batman meeting, which is in Batman's world, you know, all these 8-bit versions of all these different characters like zombies and M. Bison and that stuff going through Batman's world, it's a bit of fan service. We'll get to that in a little bit. I have it as a special note to talk about the whole fan service aspect of this movie. Because it is unique, and I want to say, I don't want to, like, ruin my appetite here and not have anything to talk about when we get there. But, yeah, I mean, just this overall feel to where all these different gamers can sort of congregate. I really enjoyed that aspect of it. But overall, for the animation, I thought it was extremely well done. Again, this whole aspect of creating these three different worlds, and again, there's this overall overarching style that is in the movie. It's obvious to see, but it's that attention to details and the different type of details that they add to each world that really made each world unique. That I really much enjoyed, and it made it feel like it was three different worlds, and yet there was a similar style overarching through the whole animation. So overall, I thought the animation was really well done. I think it's a really unique feat in what they were able to do. With this, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to play you a couple of promos. And when we come back, we're going to get into acting and the story.
In the decade of the 1930s, even the great city of Cleveland, Ohio, was not spared of the ravages of the Great Depression. In a time of fear and confusion, a character emerged that would entertain and inspire millions of children and adults alike. He began not as flesh and blood, but as a simple line drawing. His comic book adventures thrilled millions around the world. The magic of radio gave to his name a breathless signature and sound. Then with television came a whole new generation to idolize his exploits. In the 70s, the world believed a man could fly. In the 80s, he was reborn in the comics, and the 90s saw his death, rebirth, and marriage. In the 21st century, he returned to the big screen and saw his origin changed and retold on several occasions. Through the decades, he has gone by many names. The Man of Tomorrow. The Last Son of Krypton. The Man of Steel. His strength is incredible. His name is legendary. His battle is never ending. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I host an internet radio show called Views from the Long Box. Superman is my favorite character of all time, and in 2013, he is turning 75. Because of this, a large portion of the episodes this year will be about the Man of Steel in a series I'm calling
Superman at 75, the celebration of a legend.
I'm going to mark Superman's birthday in fine style by examining all aspects of the character's history, from the comics, to the movies, to the television series, and beyond, both alone and with the best and brightest of the podcasting world. It may not be every episode, but the bulk of Views in 2013 will be all about the Man of Steel. He is the first and greatest superhero of them all, and he deserves no less.
Superman at 75. The celebration of a legend.
A series within a series, and the biggest birthday card a fan can give his favorite hero, only at Views from the Long Box. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Baileytude production. New episodes drop every other Tuesday over at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, and for this series, over at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
I guess you weren't so tough after all, were you? Now it's time to send you to the next dimension.
291 original episodes.
This can't be! It's still going up!
325 manga chapters.
You act innocent, but you're deadly.
Time to die!
Dozens of characters, hundreds of enemies, and a whole lot of violence.
That kind of violence is pointless!
You see, Super Saiyans tend to be a bit violent.
Oh, crap!
Join hosts Donovan and Jesse as they cover the arrival of the Saiyans, the journey to Namek, the battle with Frieza, the mystery of the androids, and the terror of Majin Buu.
I lied when I said you could go. At least partially lied, for I will let you go to another dimension.
The Next Dimension, a Dragon Ball Z podcast. Join the fight at dbznextdimension.libsyn.com.
See ya.
Ready to form Voltron!
This is a job for Superman.
Power Rangers!
Right away, Michael.
Autobots, transform!
By the power of Grayskull!
For the honor of Grayskull!
Hello. I'm the Doctor.
Charlie's Geekcast, coming January 1st, 2013, to www.charliesgeekcast.com.
And welcome back, and let's get right into it with acting. Let's go over our cast list first. We have John C. Reilly as Wreck-It Ralph, the title character. Amazingly enough, Sarah Silverman, who doesn't curse this movie, as Vanellope Von Sweets. Jack Baer as Fix-It Felix Jr. Jane Lynch as Sergeant Tamron Jean Calhoun. Alan Turak as King Candy / Turbo Terrific. And really, that's the main cast, and there's a whole list of... We're going to get into it in fan service, because there's a whole list of actors in this movie that, again, really are more talked about fan service, but I'll talk about one here, because he is a pretty big, important part of the movie. Ed O'Neill, you know, Al Bundy, voices Mr. Litwick, who's the owner of the arcade. Overall, with the protagonists, I thought they all did a very good job. You know, John C. Reilly, I hope I'm saying his last name right. Again, it's good to see sort of an Adult Swim alumni make it to the top. Even though I can't stand Adult Swim comedy, because it's one of those things where it's like, so what's going on? Nothing's going on. Why do people like this stuff? It's the type of stuff people find funny when they're, you know, high. But he did a great job as a title character. Again, this character sort of going through a sort of identity crisis. And I really love that aspect of what John C. Reilly brought to the character of Ralph. You know, again, this person who's this bad guy, that's who he is in the game. That's sort of his job, to be this bad guy. But he's trying to understand, try to find his place to where, as Ang Lee said, just because he's a bad guy doesn't mean you're a bad guy. Because if there wasn't any bad guys, who would squash men's heads between thighs like sparrow eggs? Oh, Lord. That's the line of the movie, by the way. Every movie has a line of the movie. You know, like first in Dark, in The Dark Knight, it's, you know, Morgan Freeman going, you know, so let me get this straight. You believe that our boss is a guy who goes out every night and beats up people, and your plan is to blackmail him. Good luck. That makes the movie for that movie. That line at the beginning makes that movie. And that's really getting the comedy. But again, to Ralph trying to, you know, sort of find his place and realize that, you know, just because he's a bad guy doesn't mean he's a bad person. Which is the overall line theme, which we'll get to in a little bit. Vanellope Von Sweet by Sarah Silverman. I thought she did a wonderful job. Just for the fact that she didn't curse. I'm sure there's a blooper reel out there. Again, shame on you for not releasing it, Disney. I understand it's a kid movie, and I understand that there's a blooper reel probably filled with dirty jokes done by Sarah Silverman. But that's the whole point. It's Sarah Silverman. We know who she is. We know what she's known for. We'd like to see it. But as for in regards to the movie, I thought she did a great job with this sort of this outcast. Really with Vanellope Von Sweet, this person who was this outcast, even if it was because no one could remember that she was the princess, but still, that whole aspect of, you know, Vanellope being this outcast and, you know, looking out for herself and yet being unique, I thought Sarah brought a very unique sort of tone to the role that I thought was very good. Jack McBraver as an Fix-It Felix Jr., I'm kind of mixed on his performance. I thought he did a good job. I just don't know. It's the whole Southern accent aspect of, you know, he's shooting my honey buns. It's like, okay, why? Did he need to have this accent? Or at least that into it? It's like, really? 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 I mean, there, when he's not, like, doing all these, like, unique aspects from the South of the accent, like, you know, Honey Boo Boo, it's like, please don't remind me that there's a show called Honey Boo Boo. But, you know, when he's sort of talking normally, going, yes, ma'am, and that stuff, I did like it, because it was this aspect of, like, he was this very, you know, I have to be proper and everything, just if with a Southern accent, which it kind of threw me for a loop, because again, there are times where it just doesn't work for me. And I guess the same can be said for Gene Lynch's performance as Sergeant Taron Jean Calhoun. Again, this really is morbid story. And I guess the writers and the script itself, and this is more towards story, but overall, Jane Lynch did a wonderful job. It did what it had to do for the role of the character, you know, Sergeant Dameron Jean. It's just the, I guess, you know, the character itself, again, coming from a first-person shooter, is a much more, it's not the type of character you would see in a Disney movie, more importantly, a kid-friendly movie. And so there's this aspect to make the character kid-friendly. Again, this is more within the script. It's not against Gene Lynch. And maybe there's other voice actors that could make it work. I just don't know if you could make it work. And that's why I don't think I sort of blame the actor here. But Gene Lynch did a wonderful job in the role. Really interesting character. I guess not much to say because of the voice, but again, I thought she did a great job in the performance, and she definitely brought a sense of comedy to the character that I enjoyed when I could. Again, with Fix-It Felix and the sergeant and sort of their story, again, like I said, I'm sort of highlighting here, I really have a problem with the story. But with here, I'll move on to the antagonist. Which, you know, Alan Tudyk as King Candy, and I really love sort of the funny dub nature to have some candy. As just a
aspect of that. It's familiar. I'm trying to remember where I've heard that from. But it's like this almost goofy type of king aspect that, yet very sinister underneath, that I liked in his performance. And then, of course, the whole twist that he turns out to be turbo terrific. And it's just, when he goes into the sort of turbo terrific voice, I thought he did a really great job as an antagonist. It was this very sort of fun villain. It wasn't a creepy, like, oh my god, this is horribly bad, I feel threatened by the villain, but just this sort of fun, sort of sneaky virus, which sort of makes sense because that's what the character really is. Overall, I thought the acting was really done well. Again, I think the aspects that I have really lie within the story, which is a great segue into it. With that, let's sort of get into story, and we'll go over the overall plot and theme. The overall plot and theme, which hit you in the head a million times with it, the whole last... to an extent, it's a fairly typical Disney plot. That whole aspect of, you know, to be yourself. I mean, deep down underline, it's kind of what all sort of children stories, kind of not the importance of being yourself. But I guess, you know, the overall thing here that gets hit you over and over and over the head is, you know, just because you're a bad guy doesn't mean you're a bad guy. That whole aspect of, you know, labels don't make you who you are. You are who you are. You make yourself, not the labels that society gives you. Which, you know, I really do enjoy as a sort of overall plot and theme of the movie. I thought they did it really well, because again, a lot of the focus, the few problems I do have with the story, they weren't a majority of the story. The main focus was on Ralph and sort of his journey to discover, you know, that, you know, again, labels don't make who you are, it's you who make you who you are. I really like how they kind of use Vanellope on scene to sort of be that sort of window for him to see someone else in the same way, to discover, you know, somebody who doesn't allow labels to define them. And really, that's the aspect, you know. Here's Vanellope, who is this outcast in Sugarland. Everybody hates her, everybody tries to get rid of her, everybody keeps her from racing, and they give her the labels of being a glitch and everything, but she doesn't let that define her, you know. And that's the aspect that Ralph has to learn through the movie, you know, that, you know, the label of being a bad guy doesn't make him a bad guy. You know, he's a really good guy. He just, you know, to make the joke, he plays a bad guy on TV. And so I really love that aspect of it, you know. And again, I think the one aspect I don't like is that it just seems too quick for Felix to learn that. It's just, that's, well, he's a good guy, so he'll learn it that quick. You know, in that one scene where he's in the dungeon and he's sort of mad at Ralph, and then Ralph sort of reveals to him, you know, that's what he goes through every day. I just think it was too quick and not enough for... I would have liked to see more time and more aspect of Felix learning the whole aspect of, you know, maybe what other people besides him have to go through since he lives a high life. And I think it's a good point to go into individual character development and plot here. Again, like I said, the individual character plots, and I really enjoyed the whole aspect with Ralph learning is that, and like, I guess this is where I'll talk about my main sort of problem I have with the movie. And again, it's that, is that the scenes with Felix Jr. and Sergeant Tamron Jean just feel out of place. I really don't care. And I think, again, I thought Jean Lynch did a great job in the role, but it really leads to, in particular, that first thing we hear where she's walking through and she goes, "All right, ball gentlemen, da-da-da-da. It's not time to go pee-pee in your panties." Or whatever she says that, you know, involved the word of saying pee-pee. And it's like, it was like an attempt to make badass speech kid-friendly. And I guess that's the aspect of her character I just don't like. It's just so out of place. It just, it throws me for a loop in this movie. It really does. And I guess from there on, I don't have a problem with the character. It captures exactly what it's supposed to do. But as far as the actual character's plot is concerned, and in regards to, again, Fix-O-Fila Jr., and my issues sort of with his, the lot of sort of Southern talk that he has, and caring about the character's plot, I just don't care about that aspect of the plot. It just seems, it's like, oh, well, we have to have this sort of plot that's happening in the background, with, you know, Fix-O-Fila Jr. and the sergeant, sort of this love story, this romantic aspect, for whatever reason, I don't know why they thought it was needed in the film. It just, the whole romantic tension and aspect of the film, it was really the only good thing I think it brought to the movie was in the form of one good funny scene. And that was the whole them stuck in quicksand and the sergeant is continuing having to beat the living hell out of her to make the Laffy Taffy laugh so it will bend down so they can pick it up and get out. And the whole aspect, like, oh, I'm all better with the hammer. The hammer that fixes anything. Can I have that hammer, by the way? But that's a whole different story. But that was a funny scene. But just the whole rest of it, including sort of the epilogue where they get married, it's like, it is almost the same thing you realize at the end there. It's, oh, well, they're also representing how labels don't, you know, represent people and how, you know, a new game and an old game can get together. And it's like, no, it didn't work. It really didn't work. Their whole side story was, at the end of the day, I just felt it was uninteresting. And I felt myself, most of the time, fast-forwarding through it. Or, especially the later aspects. The whole, oh, Fix-O-Fila Jr. said the same thing that the lover that I lost because I didn't do a perimeter check, which, by the way, okay, she didn't do a perimeter check. Nobody else in that, you're a future military organization. Nobody else but her could do a perimeter check. I'm sorry. There's a reason you're being overrun by bugs. But that, said the same thing as her dead lover. It's like, who, by the way, gets killed by being eaten.
He died? And this is supposed to be a kid's movie.
Yes, Rizzo, someone died in a kid's movie. He always pops up when I mention that. But, yeah, it was just completely uninteresting. I had no interest in that aspect of the story. And it's just, like I said, it felt tacked on. It felt like it was an idea to make the story unique and for something for those characters that was never really fully thought out. I think the thing that's good is that because a lot of the focus is on Ralph in that aspect, and it really is just a sort of side story going on, it really doesn't hurt the film. And I think that's the lucky thing for this film. There's another thing that this film is lucky for, which we're going to get into in a second, that really helps as well. And I think it's that aspect that we're going to get to in about a minute or two that I don't think people recognize the whole aspect of the sergeant and Fix-It Felix, that whole relationship being tacked on. Let's get to the final talking point for story and for the review, and that's sort of the comedy, and for that matter, the fan service. And I think it's obvious this was the big thing for this movie. It's just the fan service, and for that matter, just the stuff that, like, they put this in a Disney movie? Awesome! You know, right off the bat, I go to the whole zombie and the character that's a playoff Kano from Mortal Kombat, because I guess apparently they couldn't get the rights from Mortal Kombat, who, like, just throws his arm and grabs the heart. And yes, the heart, I guess you can pull out a bleeding heart and have it blood be spilling everywhere in a kid's movie, as long as you make it purple. That's the thing I took from that scene, which I find it amazing. If it was red, people would be having a heart attack about that scene. But we made it purple, so it's funny. It makes no sense, but it's awesome. They just ripped somebody's heart, a pumping blood heart out of somebody in a Disney movie. That's awesome. And they had Satan. Ladies and gentlemen, I am really shocked that there wasn't a bigger hoopla made by Christian groups and everything that Satan was in a Disney movie, because there's a whole joke of, oh, thank you, Satan. It's Satan. It's Satan. You have horns and you're a devil. You're Satan. My God. This is the aspect of the movie that I think most people really enjoy. The story is really simple. And yeah, I do enjoy the story. But it's the fan service and sort of the comedy aspect of this film that I think really endear a lot of people to this movie. Just the way they went out of their way, you know, the cameos and everything. You know, Kyle Abear as Ryu, you know, the cameos he made. And Rube Hagadon as Ken. I have the list right. I don't know why I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I have the list right here. You know, the whole, Ruben Landon as Ken Masters, you know. Jamie Spart Roberts for Dance Dance Revolution. Roger Craig Smith as Sonic the Hedgehog. Gerard C. Rivers voicing M. Bison. I'm trying to look at sort of more here. Richard Moore will play Sour Bill as well, but he also does Zhang Li from Street Fighter. Again, like I said, he has the lie to the movie. But it's not just that aspect. It's just this list of characters. Like, one aspect I think fan service wise, as far as voice actors are concerned, is that apparently, I have to like look up his name now. he does late night, Jimmy Kimmel. I had to look it up real quick, but apparently Jimmy Kimmel was a big aspect of this film, because not only did you have Sarah Silverman, but you also had Adam Carolla in this movie. He played the sort of police eclair in the Sugar Rush. There's also sort of a Animaniacs reunion here, because you had Maurice LaMouche, who plays Tapper, the bartender from Tapper, and one of the Nicelanders is let me see which one it is Jess Q. Harnell, probably best known for playing Blacko in the Animaniacs. So you have this Animaniacs reunion here. Not that they actually met in the studio and did that, but just looking at that, they're like, oh, that's unique. Of course, you have John DiMaggio voices here. There's all these voice actors that, you know, as an animated fan and a fan of animation that we love, they're back in here. It's like, wow, it's really interesting. I'm sorry. I saw something shiny. But just the whole bring up cameos by actual voice actors. You know, you see Ken, you see Ryu, you see Blanca, you see M. Bison, Zhang Li, Cammy, and Chun-Li. Though not as close as I'd like, but just the tons of video game reference, you know, Q-Bert, all these characters, and even sort of the cameos and references that are like through graffiti that's in Game Central Station. My favorite, of course, being Aerith Lives, a reference to Final Fantasy VII, which is the only Final Fantasy reference, which I'm surprised at. But that was awesome. Just the amount of fan service and the attention, just the references to classic games that they did. It just, I really enjoyed it. I think it's what endeared a lot of people, as they went out of their way to do these cameos when they really didn't have to. They didn't have to do all this stuff. And for that aspect, I enjoyed. if there was one complaint I had, and one complaint, and I know, it's, what can you complain about fan service when you're saying you like it so much? And I guess my one complaint, and I understand, I guess, it's arcade games, so there's really no reason why they'd have to be here, but that there couldn't have been at least one reference to Kingdom Hearts, really? There couldn't be one reference to Kingdom Hearts, really? I know, it's a little thing, but and I can let it go too, but it's just, I can't help but not say it here. It's like, Kingdom Hearts has such a big influence, and it's so important to, I think, bringing a lot of people back to why they love Disney, and you couldn't make a reference here? Well, maybe we'll see that in a sequel, if it's ever made. But yeah, it's just, I really would have loved to see a Kingdom Hearts reference. But just the acknowledgement by Disney that Kingdom Hearts exists, I think, is what we're looking for. But the fan service and the comedy is just really, really good. There's a lot of, you know, when in doubt, hit somebody type of comedy here that I very much enjoyed. Overall, for this movie, it's a, taking away the fan service, it's a solid movie. I just think that, I think at the end of the day, part of the reason I'm mixed is I can't help but wonder if we'll be thinking about this movie differently in 2 to 3 years and having a bit of a geek hangover. Because there was so much excitement and there was so much appreciation for all the work Disney did for with the fan service, with the cameos and everything that's in this movie and the acknowledgement of what we love from sort of the classic game for those of us who are older. I just wonder if a lot of people miss the sort of aspects of the story that don't work. Like I said, that whole romantic angle between the sergeant and Fixit Felix Jr. And again, it's a little thing and it doesn't hurt the movie. The movie is good. I just wonder if we overhyped the movie. And that's my one aspect that I worry about. Because I enjoyed the movie. I don't think it's the greatest thing ever. You know, it's very enjoyable. The twist, again, because which I revealed before, but it's the whole aspect of, you know, yeah, I really should have seen that twist coming. It's one of those things that when the twist happens, like, oh, God, why didn't I see that coming? And kudos to the film. They draw you into the film to the aspect that you don't even think about when they're revealing that aspect. And so you don't see it coming. But, yeah, you really should have seen it coming. It's a good movie. It really is. I think my complaints, I can acknowledge, are really more on my own personality and my opinion. And I think at the end of the day, it's a solid movie that everybody should watch. So at the end of the day, I give Wreck-It Ralph a 4 out of 5. And of course, you know, added on with the Paper Man short, which I reviewed before we went into this review, which, like I said, oh my God. That's everything I love about animation, which I've probably talked mountains about before. Yeah, it's just, it's a DVD worth, how I think it's a DVD worth picking up just for the Paper Man short. I'll pay $30 just for that short, yeah. But the movie itself is good. Like I said, 4 out of 5, and very enjoyable, and everybody really should check it out. So that's it for this review. If you have any comments or anything you want to say, remember there are several ways you can contact the show. Of course, you can always leave us a comment by emailing to absolution132@yahoo.com. That's absolution132@yahoo.com. You can leave us a comment on our Facebook page, which you can find by searching the Absolution Network out on Facebook. Like us, leave us a comment there. And of course, you can always leave us a comment on the webpage itself, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're at the website or searching out any other 132 production stuff, check out all the other 132 production brethren. Of course, you know, you got Taco Momentum right here on the Absolution Network. It's a wonderful podcast that everybody should be listening to. Shaft Plus, as you know, the Shaft Podcast returns with Chris and Gene. April 1st, it's coming up. I can't wait for the new premiere. You can find that at www.shaftplus.com. You can also check out Random Red Box Review, done by Chris Stanton. You can find that at www.randomredboxreviews.com. And, of course, my other podcast, which includes Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast, which has a new episode out. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. You can also find my Comic Book Crazy podcast, along with Hexcast and some others, at my Comic Book Podcasting Network, www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And of course, while you're at any of the sites, check out our friends that you can find on the sidebar. This, of course, includes Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box and From Crisis to Crisis that he does with his good friend Jeffrey Taylor, Brad Douglas's Spider-Man Crawlspace, Steven Schlechter's Major Spoilers Podcast, and of course, Sky Gardner's Two True Freaks that you can find all on the sidebar of the site. They do wonderful stuff. Really check it out. And that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, well, honestly, I do not know what's going to go next week. More than likely, there's not going to be an episode next week. Because it's Passover. And honestly, I'm going to be so busy with family and stuff, I don't know if I'm going to get another episode out this week. Which means that the next episode will probably come out in April. And you know what April means. That's right. It's the return of Superhero Month, which means we're going to be diving into American superheroes from DC and Marvel. So, next time on Tom's Prerogative, the start of Superhero Month. So, until next time, my Toonami generation, stay golden.
Desert. Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off, and until we meet again, you know the rest.